The U.S. Census Bureau had a ridiculously hard time doing its work last year, trying to survey the U.S. population while COVID was happening, plus natural disasters like hurricanes and wildfires all across the country. In the end, the census process was delayed by months, but now the first data set of the 2020 census is in. For Michigan, the numbers are telling a story we've heard before.
This is the fifth consecutive census in which we will have lost a congressional seat, at least one.
Today, what these results mean for Michigan's political landscape. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The 2020 census shows that Michigan's population grew at a slower rate than other parts of the country. So Michigan's losing a congressional seat. Now the question is, which congressional districts and members might feel the squeeze of these new district lines? Later in the pod, we'll get into how the census results might be interpreted by Michigan's Independent Redistricting Commission. But first, we wanted to talk numbers. Kurt Metzger's here to break it down. He is the mayor of Pleasant Ridge, right outside of Detroit, and he's also the founder emeritus of the nonprofit Data-Driven Detroit. It's a group that keeps and analyzes all kinds of publicly available information about the city. And suffice to say, he is a census junkie. Kurt, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks, April. It's good to be back. Census junkie, indeed.
The results on the preliminary data were, again, probably not surprising, but maybe still a bit frustrating to learn. Officially, Michigan will lose a seat next session. What were your early impressions of the early data?
Well, we did expect, everybody anticipated the loss, although with the way the census went, there was still a great deal of question as to what the final results, you just really didn't know. And actually, in the end, fewer states lost congressionals. There were fewer shifts of seats than people had anticipated. It was interesting. Michigan's population number came in a little bit higher than what the 2020 estimate had been. So we did get above 10 million residents. So we did see some gain in population, more than we expected, but certainly we did not get enough to save that seat. And again, we were not unusual in the Midwest. We were joined by Illinois and Ohio and Pennsylvania and New York. So it was just right around the Great Lakes that all lost congressional seats once again.
I see also that California is going to lose a congressional seat for the first time since its statehood. Would you say that nationally there were any surprises in these parts of the inner Midwest and sort of the coastal capitals, given the way we've seen population move around the U.S. lately?
Well, I think California was somewhat of a surprise, although we know California has been losing population. So I guess nobody had necessarily assigned them to lose a seat, but it was the first seat in 170 years. And it is a lot of movement out of California toward Colorado, New Mexico, Texas, a lot of people moving out. Other than that, there weren't as many surprises. I think people expected Florida to gain two seats, but they only gained one. Texas gained two seats. It tended to be that same trend we've seen over and over. So not so much surprises. I think New York was a little upset that they missed out on a seat by 89 people.
That's crazy.
I know, very much so.
Something to remember the next time people tell us that it really does matter to have your person counted in the census.
I know, it's just like voting. It is amazing how important it is and how some of these very small differences can make such a big result. Minnesota was thankful for it, so they just held on.
Yeah. Statistically speaking, Michigan did not lose population, but we did grow at a slow enough rate that this loss is happening. Let's talk about that a little bit. The areas that failed to grow, what were those places?
Michigan has a real problem or has a number of problems in terms of population. You have an entire more than two thirds of the state that is in terms of counties that are losing population. If you look at the Upper Peninsula outside of Marquette and Houghton, where you've got universities and ancillary economies, you're losing population. Most of the northern Lower Peninsula, with the exception of the Grand Traverse area, is losing population. And primarily what it is an aging population that, in fact, we now have, I think at the last time I looked, was based on 2019 births and deaths. First of all, Michigan hit its lowest number of births since 1941 in 2019, and we'll have even fewer in 2020. About 60 plus counties have more deaths on an annual basis than births. That's problematic. Over 20 of our counties have a median age well over 50, which is more than any state number of counties, more than any state in the country. And you combine that with also, so you've got those losses, but you also have losses in the urban centers of Bay City, Saginaw, Flint, Detroit, Jackson, you know, a number of urban areas have been losing population as well. So there are a lot of issues that need to be dealt with, and a lot of areas that looking at it right now, have very little chance of gaining population. And so if you're limiting your population growth to a third of the state, that is problematic for future growth.
Will the areas that saw the biggest shifts happening in population, will those also be the most likely to lose a representative?
Well, you're going to have to, it's going to be interesting. Obviously, this is going to be a whole new ballgame this year with the Citizens Redistricting Commission.
Yeah, this is the independent commission that Michigan voters approved by a ballot measure a couple of years ago. They're not political names. Yeah, they're not political names. These are just plain folks who volunteered.
Yes, fortunately, Michigan is one of the few states that have taken on and having a nonpartisan redistricting effort for the first time. The question will be, in those districts that are way below what the ideal population is going forward, such as District 5, which is around Flint, Districts 13 and 14 in the Detroit area, couple of the districts in the middle of the state, all of them are going to have to enlarge in some way to gain population. And the question will be, based on the criteria that the commission is using around equal population, compactness, and then particularly this concept of communities of interest, all bets are off. I mean, it's going to be very interesting how this plays out. We know we've got to lose a district. We know it's going to come down to probably the mid to southern part of the state. It usually comes down to Southeast Michigan and may very well again.
Yeah. You know, in this state, Kurt, registered Democrats outnumber registered Republicans, but that hasn't always necessarily translated to a very simple power dynamic. There are independent voters to be won over by whatever candidates come out of this shakeup in congressional districts. There are party members who sit out elections, depending on what's going on at the top of the ticket. Do you think that with all of this going on with the Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission, would you expect to see the state's political balance shift based on what's going on right now and what you saw in the census data?
Right now, we're at 7-7 and in terms of congressional representation. And certainly, we know it's been close in terms of past elections. With the redistricting, it's going to be difficult because you do have a lot of growth over on the western side of the state. But certainly, the way the districts could be drawn, I think it could be a 7-6 Democrat, could be 7-6 Republican. It's kind of at that margins. I don't think you're going to go wide either way. I mean, I think the way the state is in terms of the rural vote is still very Republican, and that accounts for large districts. It's going to be an extremely interesting, and having the parties out of the process is going to make for a much more interesting process going forward. And I think opening up to a lot of questions as to what will happen when 2020, when the districts get drawn, but also who comes forward to run in the 2022 midterms. And again, how midterms play out when they always talk about the party in power tends to lose seats. But we'll see this time around.
Kurt Metzger is the founder of the nonprofit Data Driven Detroit, and he is also the mayor of Pleasant Ridge. Hey, Kurt, it's nice to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Nice to talk to you, April.
We need to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk about how the scramble for one less congressional seat might play out in Michigan. Stay with us.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
Now that we've got the numbers covered, we want to talk about how this business of losing a congressional seat might play out. We're talking about the Michigan Independent Redistricting Commission. With us today is John Lindstrom. He's the former publisher of Gong War News Service, Michigan. He covered the state for more than 40 years. John, hi.
How are you?
I'm all right. Should this news about the change in our number of districts, should that come as a surprise to people?
Well, this is the fifth consecutive census in which we will have lost a congressional seat, at least one. We were, from the 1962 election through the 1980 election, we had 19 members of the U.S. House, 21 electoral votes. And now we're going to be down to 15 electoral votes with the two members of the U.S. Senate. And it's quite a striking change in terms of the state's overall strength, and not just Michigan, but the Midwest's overall strength. Midwest grew slower than any other region in the country. This, of course, is the region that at one time was the West, you go back far enough. And of course, right, it was the industrial powerhouse of the nation. And now a lot of the industry has moved south, moved west. Part of that is to avoid unions. And part of it is for, you know, ever since the invention of air conditioning, people have moved to places that they otherwise considered inhospitable. And of course, you think of all the powerhouse members of Congress that Michigan had. Of course, John Dingell and Bill Ford at one time, you know, long serving legislators. I mean, all of our members of Congress are relatively recent in congressional life. And so, you know, no one's going to probably step away and make it easy for the Redistricting Commission to try to figure out a way of avoiding trying to force a runoff between two incumbents.
Right. And we have some people who are very new to congressional office, including Peter Meyer, Republican, also Democrats Haley Stevens and Alyssa Slotkin. Now, the early numbers suggest to us that the areas of depressed growth include all the congressional districts except District 12, Debbie Dingell's. But my read on the early data is that the areas that had the most depressed growth, so to speak, included Brenda Lawrence's district, Haley Stevens' district, number 13, Dan Kildee and Andy Levin's. Is there anything that you can foresee about how the Independent Redistricting Commission might try to square this within the general rules that are before them?
Well, you deal with the reality that one person is not going to be going to Congress. It would be interesting, even more interesting than we had originally thought, because if the redistricting process had gone on as it has for the last 40 or so years, it's pretty clear what would have happened. You have a legislature who is under Republican control. They would have obviously drawn a map that axed out a Democrat. The governor would have vetoed that plan. You would have had a fight. It might have gone to the Supreme Court. I'm not sure what's going to happen this time. You know, a lot of the actual mechanics of how these districts are going to be drawn are not yet resolved. And one of the things that the commissioners on the district, on the redistricting commission, have been doing is just learning some of those basic mechanics. If you follow the meetings, to the average person, they may seem rather dry, but you're just getting into, okay, let's open the hood. Let's start going through. Here's the water pump. Here's the fuel pump. Here's the carburetor. How is this all going to come together? And then you have to deal, of course, with the factors of communities of interest, compactness, trying to make sure that you don't break too many lines as you go through this. It's going to be an even bigger challenge now that we are losing one member. The math all suggests that the Detroit area is probably going to lose a representative. It's possible that you could see a situation where, say, Dan Kildee and the newly elected Republican in the Thumb area find themselves tossed together, something like that. But it's until they start processing the actual numbers, until we actually see what the census tracts show, and that won't come for some number of months yet, we really won't know how this can be resolved.
The thought of Dan Kildee and Democrat Dan Kildee and Republican Lisa McClain having to go head to head just makes my head spin.
Well, makes your head spin. What do you think it'll make their heads do?
Right.
That could remain a possibility. Instead of saying forcing somebody into a primary runoff, you could take two incumbents and force them to do the same thing in a general election. That's not out of the realm of possibility. Here's the thing. If you want to use the analogy of a car again, all you know is that you're going to have something that's going to go down the road. You don't know if it's going to be four wheels, three wheels. You don't know if it's going to be electric or gas. You don't know if it's going to be steam powered for all that. You don't know if you're going to have it drive on the left, drive in the middle, drive in the right. All you know is you're going to have something that's going down the road. And that's what we're facing with now. The members of the Congressional Redistricting Commission, or the state's redistricting commission, have been handed, this is your assignment. However you do it, do it, as long as it meets these requirements. And those requirements are, as we said, compactness, lines, equality of districts, and considering communities of interest.
John, does the commission have to start with the existing congressional map, or would it be possible for it to go back to square one and draw everything as if this were Michigan year zero?
It does not have to use the existing map. And in fact, it probably won't. There is one consideration that you have to keep in mind. In effect, the Detroit area has to have two Black representatives come out of it. So how do you draw those lines? How do you set that up? It almost invites a situation like, would you have, for example, Brenda Lawrence going up against Rashida Tlaib? Or would you put Rashida Tlaib against Debbie Dingell, so that you avoid the possibility of a Black representative losing? I don't know. I mean, that's one of the few constraints that they have to keep in mind. But otherwise, I think you have to go wide open on this now for the getting anything done that makes any kind of sense. I don't know that you keep to the existing map. You have to assume that people are going to still be representing the same basic areas. I mean, it's unlikely that Fred Upton's going to be representing Marquette, for example. But, who knows? In the end, you could be extraordinarily creative as long as you meet the requirements that prohibit gerrymandering, which is what the voters wanted to stop. And that becomes the next question. Once you come up with the lines, I mean, everyone says, oh, this will favor the Republicans or this will favor the Democrats. You have no idea. You have no idea what will happen in the next election. Where will the votes actually come from? Who will actually be affected? It's a wide open situation right now.
John Lindstrom is the former publisher of Gong War News Service Michigan. John, thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. Thank you for asking.
And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. If you want more Stateside, you can stream full episodes from the broadcast version at michiganradio.org. If you like what you're hearing here on the pod, we do hope you'll rate and review us. We want to hear what you have to say, and also it does help other people find our show. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Today's pod was produced by Rachel Ishikawa. Our theme music is by 14KT with additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.